time, the White Sales Corporation of Scotts, Michigan, brings you a program about the industries of Western Michigan and the people who work in them. Through these programs, we hope our listeners may become better acquainted with Western Michigan at work. This evening, we visit the Hamilton Farm Bureau. Your guide, Dr. Willis Dunbar.
Good evening. Driving between Allegan and Holland on M40, you pass through a small village called Hamilton. Maybe you've never even heard of it, for it has a population of only 275, according to the 1940 census. But if you turn to the right, off the main highway, just before you cross the river that flows through the town, you'll run into an industry whose sales last year amounted to $4.5 million. That's big business anywhere, to say nothing of a town of 275 people. It's the Hamilton Farm Bureau, a cooperative enterprise owned and operated by the farmers living within an 8-mile radius of Hamilton. They claim it is the largest local farm cooperative in the United States. The other day I drove out to Hamilton and spent some time looking over the various enterprises run by the Hamilton Farm Bureau and in talking with its manager, Andrew G. Lohman. To begin with, I'd like to state a personal conviction, not based on anything Mr. Lohman told me, but rather on what I saw and what I read about this cooperative. I think that its amazing success is attributable more than anything else to Mr. Lohman's leadership. He is a soft-spoken, modest fellow with a great fund of common sense. When I talked with him, his desk was piled high with letters and magazines and contraptions with which he is experimenting. The telephone rang frequently. People came and asked for papers, which Lohman, through some miracle, seemed always able to find, and for instructions, which he gave in a few crisp words. You might expect the manager of a $4.5 million business to be hard to get at, ensconced in a well-furnished office and dressed as befits a big executive. Well, Mr. Lohman's secretary sits at another desk across from his in the same room. It's a small office with no fancy reception room or anything that would suggest the size of the business. Lohman was wearing a yellow t-shirt and had on muddy shoes from tramping around the premises. I learned afterward that he had only some short courses in business college and, in addition to managing this big enterprise, operates a farm in partnership with another man. He was on 5 national agricultural committees during the war. Incidentally, he expressed the opinion that most of the crooks in Washington don't live there. They're the people who come there from the rest of the country. Originally, the Hamilton Cooperative Enterprise grew out of conditions at the close of World War I. Farmers were taking it on the chin in those days. About 140 of them around Hamilton got together and organized a cooperative to buy things they needed. They paid in $10 apiece and signed notes for $100 to be used as collateral for loans. But the banks hesitated to honor those notes. Some coal was bought in carload lots and peddled out to members. They did a little feed grinding with a farm tractor. At the end of a year and a half, though, the whole thing seemed just about ready to fold up. In fact, there was a motion made at one of the meetings to call it quits. But somehow it was kept alive. A total of $7,200 was borrowed from about 80 farmers. The board of directors signed personal notes to the tune of $22,000, and a feed elevator was built. That was 1922. Well, this worked out fairly well. The next year, part of a pickle factory was bought for a feed warehouse, and sales amounted to a little more than $100,000. Things were looking up. The directors kept borrowing more money and expanding their buildings and equipment. But farmers were buying from the organization at a fair price, and it was making money. As the years went on, it kept growing. Every year, some new project was undertaken. The Bureau handled cream for the members. It started storage equipment for oil and gasoline and started delivering to farmers. In 1929, a garage was built, and the organization started selling automobiles and tires. Well, today, the Hamilton Farm Bureau consists of an intricate maze of interlocking departments. It has a complete plant for receiving, candling, packaging, coal storing, and shipping eggs. It owns 2 feed mills, twice as large as the next largest local feed mill in the state. It has a garage, a hardware store, a farm implement department, a fertilizer plant, 2 coal yards, an electric appliance department, a retail lumber yard, a sawmill, a poultry dressing plant, to mention only a few of the more important. It provides employment for 125 people and has contributed mightily to the prosperity of the little town. It has a storage capacity of 120,000 gallons of kerosene and gasoline and 4 carloads of lubricating oil. The poultry dressing plant, which is probably the best equipped in Michigan, has a capacity of dressing 1,200 chickens per hour. And 95% of the business is done with the members, who live within an 8-mile radius of the town of Hamilton. There have been a number of changes in the form of organization down through the years. At one time, it was what is called a cooperative stock company, with only stockholders sharing in the earnings. Since 1935, however, it has been operated on a true cooperative basis. This, in a general way, is how it works. Sales of feed, coal, gasoline, and everything else are based on cost plus an amount for handling, packaging, distributing, and so on, except for commodities on which the prices are fixed. Accounts for each department are kept separately. Then at the end of the year, the earnings of each department are divided up amongst the patrons in proportion to the amount purchased by each individual. Now suppose a given department has had a sales of $100,000 and has earned $10,000. If you bought $1,000 worth of merchandise from that department, then your rebate for that year would be $100. If you are a local farmer, new in the community, $10 of that amount would be kept out, and you would then become the owner of 1 share of stock. That's all you ever need to buy. It entitles you to 1 vote at the stockholders' meetings, and 1 vote is all you have, no matter how much stock you own. Less than 8% of the business is done with non-members. Well, now let's see what all this adds up to. The farmers have invested in these 29 years a total of $13,820 in the enterprise. They have received cash rebates and coal cash of over $500,000. In addition to that, they have had the advantage of marketing and many other services. Common stock and certificates outstanding amount to $220,000, on which interest is paid regularly. The properties of the organization have a value in excess of $400,000. It all goes to show that farmers are not the rank individualists that they're sometimes cracked up to be. They can work together under able leadership, as well as industrialists or organized labor. I'll be back in a moment with the story of the egg in Hamilton. Meanwhile, a word from White Sales.
Western Michigan at Work is sponsored by White Sales Corporation of Scotts, Michigan. One department in their business is devoted to furnishing machinery and equipment for Michigan's grain elevators, feed, and flour mills. They have on hand new grain cleaners, machines for shelling and cracking corn, as well as any part that would be used to make an elevator to carry grain up to the top of the mill or a conveyor to carry it away. This is probably the most complete stock of this kind of merchandise in Michigan. For further information, call White Sales at Scotts. Phone 371. Now back to Dr. Willis Dunbar.
In Hamilton, the egg is king, or should I say queen. Anyway, eggs are big business for the Hamilton Farm Bureau. They handle about 260 carloads of eggs in an average year. Now that amounts to 100,000 cases, or 3 million dozens of eggs, or 36 million eggs. 75% of the farmers in the area devote most of their time to raising poultry, and the number is steadily growing. How this happened is an interesting story. When the co-op started some 29 years ago, farming in the area was highly diversified. But the average farmer raised stock and grain. He kept a few chickens, as most farmers do, and sometimes the hens laid a few more eggs than the family could eat. In 1926, the Farm Bureau started buying eggs and selling them to truckers. It wasn't a big business by any means, but it brought the farmer in a little extra cash, and he could use it in the 1920s. Everything else boomed in those days, but farming was still in the doldrums. Well, now some of these eggs were shipped to Chicago. And one day in 1931, the telephone rang, and Mr. Lohman talked with an egg buyer in Chicago. This chap told Lohman that he didn't want any more eggs from Hamilton. He said the eggs there were arriving in bad condition, were of poor quality, and in many cases diseased. This was, of course, quite a shock, and Lohman did some pretty sober thinking for a few days. And then he told his board of directors about it. He found that eggs were being left around the warehouse in warm temperatures and were being shipped without refrigeration. It would be useless to try to sell the farmers on the idea of producing better eggs unless they could be handled correctly. The upshot was that in 1932, a modern cold storage plant was built, candling equipment was installed, and a complete packing plant was provided. With that, Lohmann went to work with the farmers. He started by making an experiment on his own. He got the idea from producers on the West Coast, whose eggs were being sold in eastern markets. The plan he tried out was to keep the chickens confined in a coop or a small pen from the time they were hatched to the time the hens started laying. Their feeding was strictly controlled. You see, when a chicken is permitted to run around the premises of a farm, it feeds on many different foods, such as insects. Confined, it can only eat what is provided, and this consists of scientific formulae. When the hens started laying, Lohmann took a case of the eggs to Chicago. They were uniform in size and color, and when they were candled, they proved to be of the very highest quality. Well, the results spoke for themselves. The Bureau started spreading the information, providing the right feeds, and so on. The farmers took up the idea with enthusiasm, for they soon found it paid rich dividends. And incidentally, it made for much cleaner and neater farmsteads. For with chickens running loose, the yard and grounds and even the doorsteps were usually anything but clean. So the farm women liked the idea, and that helped a lot. Today, the raising of chickens has become a cold scientific process. Water flows through the chicken houses. All feeding is strictly controlled. There's plenty of room when the chickens come from the hatchery, but by the time they're full grown, there is standing room only. 1.5 chickens to every square foot of floor space. Presently, experimental work is going forward on a metal nest, so that just as soon as the hen lays an egg, it rolls out and starts to cool. Well, I reflected on that for a while and concluded that while that probably makes for better eggs, it must be terribly thwarting for the hens. Well, the consequence of this has been that Hamilton eggs today command a premium price in markets in Chicago, Detroit, and other Midwest cities. About 80% of the eggs candled are graded as U.S. grade A or double A. I had a chance to go through the Farm Bureau's modern egg plan. Every egg is candled and inspected under rigid government supervision. Packaging is done with automatic equipment by dozens of girls and women. I saw a great many interesting things at Hamilton, none more so than that poultry dressing plant. Poultry, mostly broilers, is received from producers, then it's fed and fattened, and finally dressed. The chickens are picked entirely by machines. They move along on a conveyor system from one step in the process to another. A good share of this dressed poultry is sold right at the plant, but some of it is shipped to the big city markets, Chicago and Detroit. I passed through the sawmill, where logs were being converted into boards. I saw huge piles of lumber used by farmers to improve their homes and their barns. Time will not permit a further description of all the departments of the organization. I came away from it all amazed that such a big business as this, a multi-million dollar business, could be done in one small farm community in Michigan.
That's the story of the Hamilton Farm Bureau. Next week, we will bring you the story of the Wells Manufacturing Company in Three Rivers. You have been listening to another Tuesday evening program in the series of Western Michigan at Work, presented to you at this time by White Sales Corporation, Scotts, Michigan, who have a complete stock of machinery and equipment for grain elevators, feed, and flour mills. WKZO in Kalamazoo.